This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, FA Cup fourth round featuring Black Country brouhaha and a visit to the Seven Sisters. The most frightening words a Man City fan can hear, apart from 115 charges. Also today, League Cup final sorted. Liverpool edge past Fulham. Chelsea's pumping of Borough is thorough. Plus, AFCON, Black Star brouhaha as Hooton gets a bootin' and more big names tumble as we head into the last 16. It's the Totally Football Show. Thursday, the 25th of January, by my reckoning listener, 2024. I think we can all agree on that. With us here on the Totally Football Show, hey, Duncan Alexander.
Hey.
Hey. Hello, Charlie Eccleshare.
Hello.
And from a legally prescribed distance, Adrian Clark.
Hello, everybody.
Ooh, a bit of distance on the sound there. Adrian, you're 2 seconds behind, and, you know, that's not bad going from you, I guess, but how are you?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. Yeah, looking forward to the FA Cup weekend.
Yeah.
I'll be at Sheffield United Brighton this weekend. But yeah, I'm not sure we'll get to that during the course of the show, but I will be there.
Well, let's see. Happy greatest ever fourth round FA Cup goal day, by the way, to those who celebrate. I'm referring, of course, to Charlie?
Trevor Sinclair,
like this.
Spencer's cross comes in, and the shot, oh, magnificent, that is brilliant.
Woo. Where were you, Adrian, when Trevor did that to Barnsley?
What was the year?
1997.
Oh, yeah, I was just on the way out from Arsenal at that point. I had a look at online. I had a look online at the best FA Cup fourth round goals ever, and it was by some distance the best.
Yeah.
But there was a David Bentley chip in there.
Yes, against Middlesbrough.
From 2004. That was a gorgeous little goal.
Yeah, I think that's the only goal he scored for Arsenal. That Trevor Sinclair one's interesting as well, because that was the season that David Beckham scored from the halfway line on the opening day of the season. But Trevor Sinclair won goal of the season back when FA Cup goals counted. I can't remember exactly when they changed it, but and then 2 years later, Giggs.
Probably when
FA
the BBC
Cup.
Lost the rights to the FA Cup.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, also, can I just... I've not come across this idea of best FA Cup goal by round before.
I like it, though. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Charlie, it feels like you're a little bit disgruntled with the notion that that was the goal of the season. I feel that maybe back then, overhead kicks like that were rare affair than they are
well,
now. No, yeah, I don't think it's... They used to be done in foreign clubs.
We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Every film about football always ends with an overhead kick, because it's... I think people that don't really watch football think it's like the peak of football, but it's actually an aberration. We did a piece...
It's a bad cross, invariably.
Yeah, that's behind the... We did a piece with Alan Shearer a month ago after the Garnacho one at Goodison Park, and he said he didn't like doing them because it really hurts when you land on your back, which is a very fair point.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
A little bit of perspective there. Speaking of quality football, Duncan, you had fun watching Wigan v Wickham, aka the homophone derby.
Yeah,
On Tuesday.
That's what they were singing. Probably the worst game of football I've ever watched, I think. It was very windy. The pitch was made of what looked like plasticine, and there were a lot of crisp packets. It was like, you know, that bit in American Beauty when the bag...
Lovely.
There was a lot of that. And then... To make it worse, the referee got injured.
So that was the thing. I was following your timeline. You say this is the lowest quality football match I've ever seen. Mm. Next up from Duncan is they've added 19 minutes of stoppage time.
So the ref got sandwiched between two players, and obviously the crowd cheered because it is, you know, it's natural. But it turns out that it was quite a bad injury and he had to go off. And the fourth official takes over as per the regulations, all good. But then they had to find a replacement fourth official. So the classic request went out for anyone.
They did.
Mm, they found someone.
Okay.
But it took 20 minutes. So hence yeah. the, hence, you know, an extra 20 minutes of a terrible game. And then to cap it off in the 21st minute stoppage time, Wigan scored. So.
Great goal, though.
It's quite a good goal, yeah.
It's a good goal.
Didn't appreciate it that much.
Towards the byline, trying to drive across in, stands it up. Charlie Hughes is under it!
Oh, God!
And Charlie Hughes wins it for Wigan Athletic!
That's football, isn't it? You put up with fare like that in the hope of better times.
Better times. All right. Who have you got this weekend?
Fleetwood, who are bad, but if Wickham lose that game, they are in officially deep trouble.
Oh, wow. Mm. All right. Excellent. For many people, this weekend is all about FA Cup fourth round. Lots of excitement as well about the AFCON last 16, which will be getting underway. We're going to begin today, though, with a quick word about the Carabao Cup, now that next month's finalists have been decided. They are, excitingly, Chelsea and Liverpool. Chelsea... No, Duncan? Are you thinking of 2 years ago when these two sides met in both the FA Cup final and the League Cup final? And how did those games go?
0-0 in both. The, yeah. To be fair, the League Cup final was good.
Right.
The FA Cup final, less so.
Oh. But Chelsea have now awoken officially with their performance Tuesday night against Borough. 6-1.
They did. Yeah, this was much more like it. It was a strange game. I think that the pattern of both Cup semi-finals was odd in a way, because in my head the underdog has to be the more aggressive. They have to bring the hostility, bring the work rate. Yet in both games I felt that, especially early on, it was the big gun. It was Chelsea that was the more aggressive, and Liverpool too. And that, I think, will be the great regret for Borough and for Fulham, because that's the least you've got to do. You've got to outwork, you've got to outmuscle your opponent and hope that their quality doesn't destroy you. And ultimately, if the better team marries both, then they'll win quite comfortably. That happened with Chelsea against Borough. It was a pretty dismal effort, actually, from Michael Carrick's side, who have actually been a bit of a soft touch away from home this season. They've let in 26 goals on the road.
Good Lord.
Where only four Championship teams have let in more. So this isn't an isolated incident. They just got a bit of a soft underbelly this season.
Mm. Borough were a goal up from the first leg, but that lead quickly evaporating in a four-goal first half from Chelsea, with Cole Palmer shining a bit. I think Ben Chilwell especially appreciated on his return from
Yeah, Italy. It's huge having him. Yeah, I mean, I think that's more significant in some ways than them battering a team who, as Adrian says, can be quite weak defensively.
I think 11th in the Championship.
Played into their hands a little bit, well, in quite a lot. You know, the way they gave away those goals, were caught high up the pitch. So a great result and a good performance. But I don't know if that necessarily means we can say, Chelsea are back and, you know, they've arrived under Pochettino. Mm. I think that may come, but I don't think this necessarily tells us that.
Okay. They're hosting Aston Villa in the fourth round of the Cup on Friday. And they also visit Liverpool in the league next week ahead of that League Cup final clash, Adrian.
Yeah, on Cold Palmer. I think that Cold Palmer is one of the best nicknames for a player ever, because he is just ridiculously cool, isn't he, in those big moments. I'm just wondering, what is the catch with Cole Palmer? Because Pep sold him. He let him go. I think with Zinchenko and Jesus, I love them. I love watching them. They're top players. But you can see the reason in both as to why he let them go, in terms of Zinny's defending and Jesus' finishing. With Cole Palmer, I'm still waiting to see what it is that he wasn't sure about. Has anyone got any
Well,
ideas?
A couple of things. I agree. From what I've seen, I think he's fantastic, and I think he'd improve pretty much every team, certainly squad in the Premier League. This is very much secondhand. Apparently, some Chelsea fans picked up, and he doesn't always work as hard off the ball as he might, and we know that's something that certainly Pep puts a lot of stock on. The other thing, I guess, is the more boring, prosaic FFP thing, and the fact that, you know, selling academy products is pure profit, and this is an issue. It's a real shame. And,
yeah,
you know, that we used to celebrate academy products coming through was the best thing. Now it's all pure profit.
Yeah, but this is the weird thing where Chelsea might have to sell Conor Gallagher for the same reason.
So, totally.
We're going to get to a scenario where all the big clubs kind of benefit from each other's academies because that's how you make it work.
Yeah.
So it's almost like we want you to play for us, so can you go to Arsenal's academy for 10
years? Yeah.
Cole Palmer with two goals on Wednesday. He's now on 11 since joining from City in the summer. Totally Football Show is sponsored by Google Pixel. And here's The Athletic's Liam Toomey with his report from that Stamford Bridge semi-final in Beyond the Frame.
Beyond the Frame with Google Pixel.
Everything you're about to hear has been recorded using Google Pixel's Audio Magic Eraser tool. That means that instead of our journalists' audio being drowned out by the crowd, the audio sounds just the way the journalists you're about to hear wants you to. You'll hear them loud and clear thanks to Audio Magic Eraser removing distracting sounds in Beyond the Frame.
Requires Google Photos app. May not work on all images or all audio elements.
Here at Stamford Bridge, the thing that will stay with me from this Carabao Cup semi-final second leg were the chants of Que Sera Sera that reverberated around the Matthew Harding stand after just 43 minutes. And that gives a sense of just how one-sided Chelsea's win over Middlesbrough ultimately was. It was an oddly relaxed, triumphant vibe around the stadium, given how things have been for Chelsea recently, and plenty of opportunities for the crowd to make themselves heard in a positive way in the second half as well, with cameos for Cobham graduates Alfie Gilchrist and Leo Castledine making his debut. So, very happy night at Stamford Bridge.
Beyond the Frame with Google Pixel.
Okay, well, Chelsea through, they're going to be facing Liverpool. Duncan?
Yeah, I was just thinking it's a shame, you know, if people aren't excited by another Liverpool-Chelsea final, that it's a shame that Kepa's not at Chelsea this season, because obviously in 2019 against City was the refusing to come off moment. Mm. Great, great moment. And then in the final in 2022 against Liverpool, he obviously missed the penalty in the shootout after Kelleher took one of the best penalties I've ever seen a player take, let alone a goalkeeper. So Kepa and a Carabao Cup final is a good combo, but he'll be watching it from Madrid. He probably won't be watching, will he?
He might be. Liverpool, who got past Fulham 1-1, 3-2 on aggregate. Not sure in terms of fitness where they'll be with Mo Salah by then, because after initial talk of him only being out for a couple of AFCON games, looked like it might be more of a long-term thing. However, on their way back, Trent and Szoboszlai could be back this weekend, indeed, for the game against Norwich for Liverpool in the FA Cup. Andy Robertson was in the squad as well on Wednesday for the first time since October. So, yeah.
That's huge for them. Mm. Yeah, he's been a big miss.
It's a shame for Joe Gomez, though, if both Robertson and Trent are back, because he's been tremendous at both fullback berths recently.
As he searches his first goal.
Yeah, it's coming.
All right, next up, on to the FA Cup fourth round.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
FA Cup fourth round. Woo! It's the last round with replays.
Yes.
Ever, isn't it? Aren't they getting rid of him next season?
Yeah, I think so. Mm. Can I take my solution to this problem?
Is it that teams from different divisions have replays but nobody else does?
I think make it opt in and opt out.
Yeah.
And if you have both teams, if one team wants it, you do it. If both don't do it.
Don't do it.
What's the point of Wolves-Brentford playing a replay which neither team wants and the fans probably don't want? Everton-Palace the same. But replays are great. I get it for lower league clubs. Or if you want to prioritise the cups, that's your prerogative. But the current arrangement just seems odd.
When would they have to get their decisions in?
Well, this would be the interesting bit. You do it before the game.
Right.
And if you know the other team doesn't want a replay, that's your team talk right there, isn't it? They're not prioritising this cup competition. And it would get leaked out and then fans would get annoyed, being like, I can't believe we're not prioritising the cups this season. There'd be great stories in there. I think it'd be brilliant. And it would do away with meaningless replays, but it means the clubs who want them get them.
I like it.
No downside.
Okay. This FA Cup fourth round begins Thursday night. How about that for tradition? Bournemouth against Swansea. Swansea, of course, who recently appointed Luke Williams from Notts County. I bet you're excited about Luke Williams, aren't you, Adrian?
I like him. He's another one of these progressive young coaches that looks like Pep. He's got the bald head, the goatee sort of beard going on. He's really smart, really clever. and plays a lovely brand of football. You know, it's going to be a nice, pretty match, I would imagine. Iraola against him. And yeah, it's a good fit. It's a good fit because Swansea, just down the years, in modern times, Swansea have got used to having a team that plays really nice passing football, haven't they? And the last appointment, Michael Duff, wasn't that guy, which made it a really odd choice. But Luke Williams is that guy. And he did a great job at Notts County. So we'll see. The issue at Notts County was defending. They didn't always place a high priority on that. So this could be quite a high scoring. Well, I'm hoping this will be a high scoring opener to the FA Cup fourth round weekend, because last time that Thursday night game between Palace and Everton had Wigan Wickham vibes, didn't it? It was horrific.
He'll be excited about going to Bournemouth as well and meeting the hipsters tactician, Iraola. So they'll imagine they'll have a big hug. Also, Luke Williams responsible for one of the best kind of debates this season, where
the corner.
Fans forum when he was defending short corners.
We've actually scored the most goals in the division from corners. But you don't know they're from corners, do you? Because unless we whack it in a box, it's not a corner. Okay? But we take a corner, we pass the ball, until that ball is turned over and we give it away or it goes off the pitch, it's still a corner.
The most brilliantly lower league thing you can imagine, like fans being upset that they're just not smashing it into the box. So.
But quite a sterling defence of corners from Luke Williams. Excellent. Among the other 15 ties, listener, you've got Maidstone United, who are the lowest ranked side left in the competition. They'll be going to Championship High Flyers Ipswich. Newport County welcome Manchester United to Rodney Parade. That's on telly. There's five All Premier League fixtures: Chelsea, Aston Villa, Everton, Luton, Sheffield United, Brighton, which Adrian's excited about, and Fulham, Newcastle. Liverpool, as mentioned, are taking on Norwich. There's also that long-awaited Black Country Derby in front of fans between West Brom and Wolves. That's early Sunday. And the holders, Manchester City, have a trip to the one place they never win, never, or even score a goal, and that's the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Boom. Now, this is live Friday night on ITV. Charlie, they've visited Man City, the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, five times in all competitions. They've lost every time. They've never scored a single goal there. How, and will this Friday be different?
It is extraordinary. And in some of those games, they've had chance after chance. They've missed penalties. It is really weird. I mean, four different managers as well in that time. Pochettino, Mourinho, Nuno, Stellini / Conte. Conte was ill at the time. Stellini was there. Yeah, so it is kind of baffling. It's kind of taken in both games where they've missed a lot of chances, but also the, you know, sometimes City actually look quite short of ideas if they go behind. There have been some of them in there as well. Will it change? I do think the FA Cup dynamic might help in just enabling Pep and City to frame it as something slightly different. Not, I know one of the games was Champions League, but otherwise they've been league games, just to be like, look, forget that. This is different. There'll be a different rhythm, a different feel to it. But certainly, you know, when the draw came out, I think a lot of Spurs fans were kind of relishing it, given that recent history. The absence of Son is big because he has tormented City, both home and away.
84 shots with 22 on target across those games from Manchester City. So it is freakish. I mean, if you have 22 shots on target and don't score a goal, that is quite frankly ridiculous. So yeah, it's been a bogey ground for them. But look, they're playing well, aren't they, City? Annoyingly. 14 goals, 3 conceded in 4 wins on the bounce since the Club World Cup. So, and we know that Ange will attack the game. He doesn't know any other way, does he, mate? So I just think that it will be a more exciting game this time around, and that City are highly likely to score.
Son, one of the absentees for Spurs City, with a increasingly full squad, Kevin De Bruyne back. Is Erling Haaland now fit?
He hasn't played yet, so it's not clear yet whether he will. I mean, I guess Guardiola's press conference is today, so we might learn more. Just to add get some more numbers on that, just for XG heads, February 2020, a game Spurs won 2-0. Spurs had an XG of 0.38, City had an XG of 3.0. Later that year, Spurs won 2-0 again. Spurs were 0.79, City were 2.18. And then in August 2021, Spurs 1.06, City 2.24.
Was this Hugo Lloris?
I mean, he did say in one of those games he saved a penalty. He also saved a penalty in the Champions League quarterfinal game. Yeah, he made some good saves, but I do remember in some of them just being really wasteful finishing, open goals, just kind of, you know, calamitous stuff. So, you know, a bit like how City had under Pep for a while, that kind of Champions League knockout, somehow they'd find a way to almost knock themselves out. It's a little bit like that. Obviously, they've now put that hoodoo to rest. But yeah, this is the final frontier. Wow. Can they win at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium or score a goal?
Yeah. City are going to be without Calvin Phillips. How will they cope? He's completing a loan move to West Ham. Ange, meanwhile, whose press conference, Charlie, you are going to be heading off to very, very shortly, could be calling on James Maddison.
Yeah. Yeah, he's back in training, so he'll be in the squad unless a late setback. And then it's a question of, does he chuck him straight in from the start, which feels like a little bit of a gamble. He has done similar with other players, but that's like Van de Ven came straight back into the team against United in their last game, but they were without Ben Davis, so they didn't have much alternative. Maddison, they do have other options, but they are without Saren Bissouma from the midfield already, so he may be tempted. We'll see.
Okay. Is that going to do?
It's a huge boost. Huge boost, given how good he was.
And Pep loves Maddison as well, doesn't he? So it'll be further pain for Guardiola if Maddison comes back and causes mayhem.
Has there ever been a player that settled in quicker than James Maddison to a big club?
Adrian Clark at Southend?
Yeah. All eyes were on him. But seriously, he was unbelievable, wasn't he, early in the season? I think he probably was the best player in the Premier League in those early weeks. And it's never that easy when you've got a new bunch of teammates, new brand of football. But I can't remember seeing a new face look as confident as Madders.
Mo Salah at the first season at Liverpool. Will I said that. Somebody. Did you?
Yeah, yeah, you did, yeah. You talked over me with your Aidan Clark Southend jive.
Yeah, I do. I mean, Maddison, not only how good he was, but just how much he instantly looked and felt like the kind of platonic ideal of a Tottenham player. Like, he's everything Spurs fans, you know, he's kind of got a bit of that maverick streak to him. He's attacking, he's flary. But yeah, he was 2 assists on his debut and he was off from there. Basically played really well every game until that injury.
Magnificent, yeah. Well, hopefully he could be back for this one. Producer Charlie, among those sighting with Spurs facing Man City in the fourth round, a game regarded as one of the greatest comebacks in FA Cup fourth round history. Do this round by round as well. I'm referring to Spurs Man City from 03-04. Do you remember that one, Adrian? City, who were managed by Kevin Keegan at the time, went 3-0 down at halftime then. To make matters worse, Joey Barton said something to the ref, one can only guess what, and got himself sent off. So City were now 3-0 down and a man down, and yet came back to win in the second half 4-3. Incredible.
Ploughing on, squeezed it to Tarnat. What was this? A bit of tugging on Macken. He scored! Oh, John Macken!
It all sounds very Spursy, doesn't it? Is that where it came from?
Oh, I imagine.
Well, it didn't help, but that was only 2 seasons after they were 3-0 up at half time against Manchester United and lost 5-3. So it was. This was a bad
trend.
Time.
Huh? It's a trend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, why do Spurs keep throwing away 3 goalies at home? If for people who want more in this game, Jack Pitbrook has written a brilliant piece today on The Athletic, both about that piece, but also just where both clubs were at that time. And they were, I mean, they weren't even really banter clubs because they weren't sort of interesting enough. They were, especially City, you know, they'd signed a bunch of kind of washed up has-beens and were kind of going nowhere. Spurs were also going nowhere. Right. What a difference 20 years makes.
How different it is now. And will you be bringing that up with Ange at the press conference? What's your first question?
Well, the first question, I guess, will be about Maddison and what chance he starts. Any other injuries? Because we've kind of got used to a sort of cheeky hamstring going in training. So there's been quite a lot of training since their last game. So every chance there'll be another one.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, you can read Ange's answers on theathletic.com.
Very much so.
Exclusively. Nice.
In a way.
In a way. All right. Next up, let's get on to some of the other action coming up in the fourth round of the FA Cup.
For most of us, January means New Year's resolutions. But for the footballing world, January means one thing. Transfers. There's a lot going on, and to stay on top of every move that matters, you need the Athletic Football Podcast.
They were prioritising somebody like Mason Mount.
5 days a week, we'll help you cut through the noise with the most reliable reporters in the industry. David Ornstein, Adam Crafton, Laurie Whitwell, and many more will not only tell you what the deal is, but how it happened too. So make sure you don't miss a single transfer beat in January with the Athletic Football Podcast. Listen for free wherever you get your shows and hit follow and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Do you want to talk about Everton, Luton, Sheffield United, Brighton? Yeah, I bet you do, Chidren, don't you? You wanted to get onto that. Or Fulham, Newcastle, who may still have Kieran Trippier because they've been busy rejecting bids for Bayern for the right back. What do you think then? Sheffield United, Brighton. Adrian, why have you picked that one?
Well, I haven't picked it. TalkSport sending me there. But it'll be okay. It'll be a good game. I mean, for Sheffield United, it's less important. I would imagine that the fight for survival takes precedent. But for Brighton, a team that is sort of just outside, really, the European mix this time around, you know, winning the FA Cup could be an avenue back into Europe if they're not going to actually win the Europa League itself. So, yeah, I think for Brighton, you want to be sending your best team there and to put on a little bit of a show.
Very
because
nice.
It's been a bit hit and miss for the Seagulls this year. They haven't kicked on. I think every year they seem to have kicked on since they came into the Premier League. But this year, I would say slight regression. I'm not quite sure why.
Perhaps
but
domestically,
injuries,
but yeah, a lot of Brighton fans would feel the fact that they are progressing in, or so far progressing in the Europa League, their first ever European adventure is the progression this year. Goalless in the game Monday night against Wolves, though, in the Premier League.
Two goalless draws running, wasn't it? Having
scored and conceded in every game, so...
Well, not quite. I think that sequence
that came,
is broken.
They lost 2-0 to Arsenal. You were guaranteed goals until you weren't.
Until you weren't. Anyway, enjoy Bramall Lane, Adrian. Perhaps if you could pick one fixture to go to out of all the 16 fourth-round affairs, it might be the one early Sunday at the Hawthorns as West Bromwich Albion host their rivals, Wolves. Wow. Now, this season, we've already had the first weird time derby in 8 years, Sunderland against Newcastle, which didn't really give us the upset that many people were kind of hoping for. What do you think about this one then, as Wolves, as we mentioned, goalless Monday with Brighton, take on their rivals from the Championship? Adrian, what can you tell us about the Baggies?
Well, they are a very well-coached team under Carlos Corbran. He's a smart guy. He's very good at coming up with game plans and of negating the strengths of the opposition. They've got tons of clean sheets this season. They beat Ipswich. They won to nil against Ipswich. They won to nil against Leeds. And I think this is the kind of game he will relish. I think the atmosphere is going to be amazing. But Gary O'Neill as well, I like the cut of his jib. I like his aggression as a coach. He sort of marries modern attacking principles with old-fashioned sort of ideals of hostility and work rate and all that comes with it. So I think this is going to be a cracking game. I really do. West Brom, by the way, have the Indian sign over Wolves. They've progressed from 8 of their last 9 FA Cup ties against Wolves, and Wolves are winless in their last 11 trips to the Hawthorn. So it's a little bit of a bogey ground for Wolves. So they're going to have to, you know, buck history if they want to progress here.
Of course, I just Googled, what does the phrase the Indian sign mean? Concealed track used by or traces revealing the presence of Indians, native indigenous
right.
folk, I guess. So you'd probably want to be saying, you know, indigenous sign, indigenous folk sign, probably.
Or the woke brigade will be all over you.
I apologize. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I apologize. Yeah, I'll work on my cliches moving forward.
If only there was a podcast for that. Just on, this is an early... this is a morning kickoff, isn't it? It's 11:45.
Yeah, 11:45, yeah.
And this made me think of when 11:15 was a sort of semi-regular slot in the Premier League a little while ago. Liverpool and United used to play at 11:15, again, for policing reasons.
I did a piece on this a couple of months ago, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Defending the early kickoff, because people only remember the bad ones, generally. But there have been some big... Yeah, but there was a brief... Late 90s, early 2000s, 11:15, and it was kind of a... I think that's when they were trying to capture Chinese... TV audience.
Makes sense, yeah.
I
feel like it was always United, which again would make sense.
A lot of United-Liverpool games, yeah, like a low sun. Sander Vestervelt kind of cowering from a low sun.
Beckham making hay in a couple of those.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Famously, City fans, I think, turning up in pyjamas as... Did people not used to turn up and brush their teeth? Obviously, this was something at Chelsea for other motives recently, but I'm sure... No, possibly not.
That was the Chris Evans game show.
Oh, easy mistake to make. Adrian?
As a player, I think that the morning kickoff's fine because you're used to kind of getting up and training. Probably around 11 o'clock is often a start time. And for me, the worst bit about being a professional footballer in terms of match prep was the wait throughout the day, because you don't really want to know what to do with yourself. I preferred to just crack on with it, basically. So it's get up and go, isn't it?
You got up before, like 10 minutes before the kickoff. That would be maverick. Just roll out of bed and be like, oh, play a game. Yeah.
In your pyjamas?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Adrian wears pyjamas. I wouldn't want to speculate. But didn't it play havoc with your pre-match meal? Weren't you banging down ravioli at 8:58?
It simplifies the pre-match meal because really you just need to have a decent brekkie and you're good to go, aren't you? But when you've got that 3 o'clock kickoff, you have your brekkie and then you've got to have this random sort of pasta-based chicken meal at 11:30 or something, you know, 12 o'clock at the latest. You know, that was weird. So I think just have a fry up and get crack on.
A fry up.
It used to be, but I think those
days have
long gone.
Through the door came Arsene Wenger. Honestly,
pre-broccoli era.
And honestly, that broccoli and the mashed potato at like 10:30 in the morning was just disgusting. Just completely minging.
What was the worst pre-match meal you saw a teammate have? Or the most kind of like outlandish? Because there's a famous story about the French cyclist Jacques Anquetil in the 50s who... was a bit of a bon viveur, and he would often have like goose and champagne before stages. I don't know, maybe that was de rigueur at Arsenal in the early 90s.
Especially with the French players.
I mean, I didn't see that. No, but yeah, the glass of red was brought in on occasion at the team hotel. But but fry ups were generally normal, I've got to say, which just sounds bizarre now.
Doesn't it? There you go. That's the Black Country Derby, which should have an amazing atmosphere. Long time since the fans have been able to enjoy that one. And it sounds, says Adrian, like the home supporters might be having the best of it. Meantime, Adrian, what can you tell us about Newport County as they welcome Man United to Rodney Parade? They've got a cracking record there against big sides, haven't they?
Yeah, they beat Leicester, who were Premier League at the time. I think they beat Leeds and Middlesbrough while they were in the Championship. They took Tottenham to a replay. Brighton, I think they took to penalties. So yeah, look, there's a tradition there. It's quite an intimidating ground. In terms of, you know, they've always been quite hostile. It's not a big ground, but the fans there will let the opposition know that they're not fans of them. Look, Newport come into the game in good nick, actually, unbeaten in seven. They're not going to try and be progressive in terms of passing. I think no team has made fewer sequences of 10 or less passes, or 10 or more passes rather, in League Two, the Newport. So basically, they're going to get it. They're going to work exceptionally hard to win the ball back. They're going to be aggressive. And as soon as they win it, they're going to send it forward and look to turn Man United and get territory. It's going to be a classic clash of styles, I would imagine. It'll be up and at them from Newport County. And look, the way that Manchester United have gone about their work this season, I'm not saying that Newport are going to win this game, but if ever there was a team that might be primed for a banana skin and maybe slipping up in a match where they don't fancy it, it could be this one, because Newport will not roll out the red carpet, I guarantee it.
You say slipping up, but what the thing that sort of encapsulated Newport or Rodney Parade recently was their terrible pitch, which has improved slightly. And you kind of think someone should be out there with a tractor just churning it up a little bit.
A pogo stick.
John Beck style. Mm. He's a Cambridge manager. Yeah, I do think United, though, generally they're quite good against teams they should beat. I mean, they lose to teams...
Never beaten Newport County.
Well,
they've never faced them.
A bogey team. Yeah. They've had the Indian sign from a safe distance.
Absolutely, yeah. there you go. Well, I'm looking forward to that. And that one is at 4:30 on Sunday, and it is on television. Very good. Lowest ranked team in the competition are Maidstone, who visit Ipswich, who are not Premier League, but about as close as you can get. Second place in the Championship, and took a point off the runaway leaders of that division, Leicester, Monday night with an 89th minute equaliser. No side from the sixth tier, as Maidstone are, have reached the last 16 since Blythe Spartans, all the way back in 77-78. How about that?
Maidstone, obviously famously the team Nick Hornby should support. He was taken there a little bit as youngster, but chose to support Arsenal. So children that have a chance to support a smaller team and then choose Arsenal, very painful. I can support that, yeah.
There is an Arsenal connection there. Captain Maidstone by Gavin Hoyt. Do you remember Gavin Hoyt?
Justin's brother.
He only made one appearance for Arsenal, but he came through the ranks. And he's since gone on to have a decent non-league career. Managed by George Ellacobi, the former broad-shouldered Wolves defender. I mean, he was a tank, wasn't he, of a player. It'd be amazing. Look, I played, that was the final level I got to, was sort of level six in the Conference South. And there were some good players in it. There really are. But Ipswich are a very good team. And Kieran McKenna, I was at the game against Leicester. Kieran McKenna, if ever a manager nailed it tactically in a game and made good decisions, I thought it was Kieran McKenna. He's a very smart guy, makes very few bad calls. I think they'll navigate Maidstone, but it'd be interesting to see how they fare.
Tractor boys there could come in handy at Rodney Parade in Duncan's pre-match vision. others from the FA Cup fourth round, you've got Bristol City against Nottingham Forest. Bristol City, of course, knocked out West Ham in round three. Could they take another Premier League scalp, etc. and so on? Certainly Nuno would be one of those who'd be signing up for no replay, thank you very much, wouldn't he?
Absolutely.
There's an all-championship tie between Sheffield Wednesday and Coventry. That's Friday night. Liverpool, Norwich, Watford, Southampton. Saints, who are on a club record, 21 games unbeaten in all competitions. 21. Are they going to make it to 22, Adrian?
Probably, yeah. I think they're flying. There's no doubt about that. By the way, earlier on in the show, we talked about great FA Cup fourth round goals, didn't we? There is one that we left off. And it might have been forgotten, but Stuart Armstrong, do you remember it? It was from a couple of years ago. He did a Travella. Now, I didn't even know what a Travella was recently.
Don't get them recently. In the National League,
when Wes, but Exactly, where Wes Burns basically hit one with the outside of his foot that got goal of the month. Well, Stuart Armstrong hit one just as good as that.
Jan Valery doesn't shoot. Saints trying to be patient. Then the shot comes in. Oh, what a screamer. Well, the way they've been playing, you feel it was going to take something special to get Southampton back into this cup tie.
The Travella came from a play called Fabio Quaresma. And it, as I understand it, it has to be with the outside of your boot, but from the kind of where your toes join the foot, whatever joint that would be. So it's from that little bump on the outside of your boot, and it has to involve a crazy amount of spin, hopefully in the wrong direction as well.
Yeah, kind of curling back. Quaresma is exactly that.
The Armstrong goal was helped by the camera angle as well, because it was directly behind it, and you could feel the thump.
Oh, nice. Did you have a signature move, Adrian?
Yeah, it's the Travella.
Was it?
Yeah, scored a couple. I did actually score a couple for Stevenage. Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't bring it up for this exact reason. But,
is there any evidence of that?
I don't mind
Adrian
bragging about it. Yeah. Annoyingly, and this is genuine.
Conveniently.
This is genuine, because I was so proud of it, that one particular goal, because it was from the corner of the 18-yard box, so quite far out, and it was an outside of the foot, Travella, into that far corner. The camera was on the other side of the pitch, so you didn't capture it in all its glory. So frustrating.
That is frustrating.
One of those great philosophical debates, if Adrian Clarke scores a Travella, but no cameras there to see it, did it really happen?
Leeds are taking on Plymouth this weekend, and Leicester up against Birmingham, and the round is going to conclude on the Monday with Blackburn against Wrexham, which you can see live if you live in Wales. First meeting of these clubs in 42 years for anyone who's keeping track of that. Wrexham currently second in League 2. Oh, I did this just in. We can all watch it. Oh, of course, these days you can find BBC One Wales anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, not just on strange streaming sites, but on your EPG, look for it and you'll find Blackburn Wrexham. Or it could just go along, because maybe there'll be some big stars there.
Mm.
Oh, Adrian.
I think this has got upset written all over it. Blackburn are in terrible form, absolutely dreadful. They've plummeted from being in and around the playoffs to sort of looking over their shoulders, worried about relegation. And the bulk of their problems have been conceding goals. They've got a really young team. And it's a talented team, but I think with young players, when they get their confidence knocked a little bit, it can snowball, and that seems to be what's happened there. So, and Wrexham, as we know, they don't really take any prisoners. They're pretty direct and strong, and I think this could be a very interesting tie. I don't think it'll be pretty, but I give Wrexham a great chance of causing the upset.
Magnificent. All right. Monday night, BBC One Wales. Next up, onto the AFCON.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
AFCON! Group stage is concluded. It's been the highest scoring group stage since 2008. We're joined now, of course, by Maher Mazahi, who's in a very scenic location. Where are you, Maher?
I'm at a place called Le Pic Villa, which used to be the house of a governor in Félix Houphouët-Boigny's, the first Ivorian president's cabinet. It used to be his house. And apparently this house is very interesting architecturally, because whichever room you're in, there's always an exit. He was very, very paranoid because apparently he was having an affair with the president's wife. So that's where I'm at right now.
Damn. All right. Well, Seems a bit prosaic to talk about the last 16 of the AFCON after that, but we know who the teams are. And there's
well, there's lots of ways to go out of AFCON as well.
that's so true. That's so true. Cape Verde and Equatorial Guinea, the two smallest countries in the tournament, have both made it through to the last 16. Some big names haven't, including, unfortunately, Algeria. Namibia in the last 16 for the first time. So many shocks as the groups came to a conclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's been the main storyline of this African Cup of Nations, is that a lot of the more traditional heavyweights, teams like Ghana, Algeria, or Tunisia, have been eliminated. Although there are only six teams that are eliminated from the group stages in the African Cup of Nations with this expanded format. I think it's due to a few different things. Poor coaching is probably number one. Poor preparation as well from some of these teams, like the Gambia, for example, who, you know, they had some of the circumstances were out of their control, like the tardy arrival to Cote d'Ivoire because of the airplane issue. But then even some of the lodging conditions, for example, where the Gambia are over here, have been a little bit shoddy. So overall, I think not any crazy surprises, but a good number of them as well.
Okay. A dramatic conclusion, in particular to Group B on Monday, when you had Egypt and Ghana rivals to go through, and Ghana 2 goals up against Mozambique. Shots of Mo Salah at their game, looking on despondently as the Varas set to exit. But then Mozambique got that penalty and then Egypt scored a goal, and everything seemed to happen in those final minutes.
It was crazy because in the 85th minute, there was one scenario, and then four goals are conceded in the final 5 minutes in both of those matches. And it's really been part and parcel of this African Cup of Nations, is that when a team scores a goal, they either score a second one immediately after, or the opposing team scores one within the next 5 minutes as well. There needs to be some kind of psychological study that's done about maybe the complacency of these teams after they score a goal. But yeah, Mo Salah was, you know, biting his nails, checking his phone, informing his teammates that the other game had actually finished 2-2. It was one of the craziest nights I can remember at an African Cup of Nations. Just all-out action, drama, so many, as it stands, this is the scenario, and then a goal is scored. And then as it stands, this is the scenario, and another one is scored as well. So great entertainment value for those of you who aren't watching.
All right, and Egypt going through. Ghana, who were 2-0 up, going into stoppage time, going out instead, and Chris Hughton making his exit. One of many managers to do so after this group stage. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the main issue with Ghana, I think it predates Chris Hughton. When you listen to Ghanaian supporters, they believe that it's a generation of players that really aren't stepping up to what it means to wear the shirt. And, you know, these are narratives that supporters have sometimes. And we think, you know, we as analysts or maybe as former players, we think, you know, what does that exactly mean? But when you see, for example, players, after the way they were eliminated, conceding 2 goals in the final 5 minutes, refusing to speak in the mix zone, clashing with other journalists. When they pass through the mix zone, the journalists are booing them, which is not very professional. And then they'll turn around and they'll say, oh, yeah, you're going to see when we go back to Ghana. Just some of the comportment of some of these players. And it's not just Ghana. It's also Algeria and Tunisia as well. I think that's been the most disillusioning thing for some of these supporters, is that there's been a real lack of accountability from players and from coaches. They haven't stepped up to face the music. They haven't explained themselves to journalists or to the wider footballing public. And that's been, I think, one of the more disappointing things.
Okay. Ivory Coast making it through to the last 16. After firing their manager earlier in the day, Cameroon also making it after an extraordinary 3-2 victory over the Gambia. Were you watching that one, Maher?
Yeah, I was in the stadium for Cameroon versus the Gambia, and it's kind of what I told you. The match was 1-1. The Gambia score, and they go up 2-1. And the celebration after they score 2-1 is reminiscent of, you know, African football in the 70s and 80s when the president wins a trophy and he wants to parade it around to all the corners of the stadium. They were doing laps around the athletic track celebrating because they thought they had won the match. And sure enough, exactly as I explained to you, Cameroon equalized, and then they go up and they win 3-2 in injury time. The Gambia had one final chance to score. The guy tried to punch the ball into the net, but, you know, in the age of VAR, I don't think that's really going to work. But funnily enough, Cote d'Ivoire do, as you mentioned, qualify as one of the best third-place teams. I watched that match in Trècheville yesterday, and Trècheville is one of the more working class districts of Abidjan. It's sort of set up in a grid, you know, perpendicular streets and avenues. And as soon as Morocco beat Zambia, which ensured that Cote d'Ivoire would qualify through, you know, a backdoor sort of way, nonstop celebrations, fireworks. And in West Africa and in Central Africa, they do this very specific celebration where you'll see droves of people, 40, 50 people just running together and singing. And I tried to do the same. You know, I told my friend Alex, I said, you know what, I've seen this several times now. I think I'm going to go and go for a run with them. We just had a shawarma, so I wanted to run it off. And I got to maybe a kilometer and a half, and I started getting those, you know, that sharp pang on the side of my stomach. And they kept going for 4 or 5 kilometers, and just so much thankfulness for Morocco, for beating Zambia. And now they really feel like there's a new lease on life for the tournament for them as they go up against Senegal and Yamoussoukro in the round of 16. Tough match.
Okay, yeah, they'd lost their previous game 4-0 against Equatorial Guinea, which led to the manager heading out. The last 16 then, what are you most looking forward to, Maher? Where are you going to be watching?
I'm going to stay mostly in Abidjan. I'm looking forward to Nigeria versus Cameroon. That's one of the more historic you know, rivalries in African football, two of the most successful sides. And whoever comes out of that group is going to feel very confident that they can at least get to the semifinals, because the other round of 16 that they're going to go up against, I believe, is Angola versus Namibia, which are two of the sides that aren't going to be favored to go deep into this tournament. Also looking forward to seeing if Cote d'Ivoire can have another lease on life in this tournament. You know, they sacked their coach after 3 games in this tournament. I think maybe presuming that they were eliminated, but they aren't. And now they have an interim coach, Emers Faye, who's just 40 years old, a former player. And now they go up against Senegal. If they can somehow manage to eliminate the defending champions after some of the poor performances that they put in the group stages, this tournament would take on a completely different atmosphere. It would be, I think, so much excitement, and I'd be very, very excited for that.
Okay, that's coming up on Monday. Also worth keeping an eye on Egypt, who are up against Democratic Republic of Congo on Sunday. Morocco, too, who are on Tuesday up against South Africa, without their boss, Walid Regragui, who is suspended for 4 games. What did he do, Maher?
We don't know exactly. We saw that after the match, he went over to the DR Congo defender, Chancel Mbemba, who's currently at Marseille. And he shook his hand, but he shook it very hard. Ooh. And he didn't want to let go.
A joy buzzer.
And he kept telling Mbemba, look at me, look at me, look at me, in French. And Mbemba saying, let go of my hand, let go of my hand. And he refused to look at him in the eye. And Regragui was getting very incensed. And then there was just a widespread melee across the pitch that went into the tunnel. Wow. But we don't know what exactly he's being charged with. I don't know if it's inciting a melee or if it's, I don't know. Because Mbemba, after the match, he said, in the mix zone, I'd never thought that that word can come out of the coach's mouth.
Ooh.
Which some people interpreted as racism. Walid Regragui, he outright and flatly denied that. And I think for me, it would be absolutely shocking if he ever uttered a racist word. It doesn't seem like it's his character at all. I could see him calling him a whole host of other names, like insulting him, but I would be very surprised if it was racism. So we don't know what exactly he's been charged with, but he is suspended for the round of 16 match, and he should be back for the quarterfinals.
Okay, yeah, two of those games of suspension have been suspended for a year. Excellent, Maher. Thank you so much for bringing us up to speed on all of that. Enjoy yourself there at the Pig Villa, where it sounds like it's atmospheric to the extreme.
Yeah, it's a FIFA conference now. Ooh. We're at a FIFA meeting with media, so they, you know, pulled out all the stops, and I'm really looking forward to this lunch because I haven't been eating very well since I got here.
Okay. Don't go on any runs after, though. That would be my tip. Excellent. Yeah. Not in any sense.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Maher, thank you so much.
Speak soon.
This just in from AFCON. Mail Sport reporting that Egypt player Imam Ashour will not be available for Egypt's last 16 clash with DR Congo because he's concussed after doing a backflip in training.
No way.
If that's true, then that'll be added to the pantheon of
Martin Palermo-esque, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
All
right.
He's okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. But also hope it's true.
Here's Adrian. Adrian.
Couple of revelations there. Obviously, a manager getting suspended for crushing somebody's hand, potentially.
And using a word, but we don't know
and
what.
And the 4K... Yeah, but then the 4 or 5K celebration run. I mean,
it's more than you run.
Give
a player,
anyone a stitch, wouldn't it, that?
Yeah. Well, that's what makes AFCON AFCON. And yes, Saturday, the last 16 gets underway. Well worth tuning in for in and around your FA Cup fourth round experience. Brilliant. That's today's Totally Football Show. We're done. Many thanks, Charlie. You're heading off to see Ange. Good luck with that. Duncan, lovely to see you. Adrian, many, many thanks to you and to Charlie and Liam in the booth. And also to you, listener. Have a great weekend. We'll be back a little bit later on Monday with our fourth round roundup. But, you know, do hang around and join us for that. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.